At that point, it's customary for me to talk about my own work and that of my team of graduate students and collaborators and ignore the speakers, but I will try to resist that temptation. Okay, so the plenary talk by Helmut, small world architectures, and I think we saw a lot of connections between the speakers here in terms of many of them collaborators or colleagues at places like Waterloo and stuff like that. Scale-free neural networks. There was some interesting stuff on accuracy and training set size. And the conclusion there seemed to be that the small world network version was learning fastest and in some cases rewiring helped. But I think towards the end there was a sort of question about overfitting, because the performance that was seen on the training data didn't seem to be always reproduced on new test data, so the generalizability problem. Okay, but some interesting ideas there. And so one might ask, should statisticians, who are typically using very simple-minded neural networks, think in terms of more complex architectures. Okay, Stan Young, well, this is an NPCDS workshop, National Program on Complex Data Structures, and Stan's data certainly were complex, at least the data he's looking for. He's got this very complicated hierarchy of data sets going from disease all the way back to genotypes in principle. And the two methods that he talked about mostly, that should be a two-way clustering of two-way tables. And I guess I could coin a new phrase here. Stan's a great proponent of recursive partitioning, but if I understood correctly, his talk is recursively applying recursive partitioning, maybe going from the last block of data all the way through and building one set of variables on top of another. So that was very interesting and something that I think one could build quite an interesting proposal for NPCDS around. It's certainly very complex in terms of the data. Okay, Mu Xu, first of two talks on unbalanced classes in classification, something I'm quite familiar with in terms of the drug discovery context that Mu was talking about. And I think he's right on with the discussion of the criteria. The misclassification rate's not a very good criterion, nor is deviance for that matter for these sorts of problems. And the average precision or the hit curve is a much better way to go. Clever thing there was he basically managed to reduce the amount of data sets, the amount of data that you have in these data sets. There's a lot of data in these molecular databases, but not necessarily much information because of the restricted number of class 1 objects. And so this was a very clever idea to do something like k-nearest neighbors or support vector machines, but building the approximation only around the class 1 objects. So that was computationally efficient and very, very neat and apparently worked very well. Grigoris continued with the same sort of theme that, again, for unbalanced classes, he had an alternative criterion, his ROC criterion, which is, I think, in principle, rather similar to average precision. I don't know if it's exactly the same, but if it's not, it's very similar. And he was, I think, suggesting that we build trees. He certainly did this using greedy rock to make splits. And he mentioned projections of explanatory variables or features, but I don't know whether we actually saw an example of that or not. But anyway, that was certainly mentioned. And his RB tree beat naive Bayes, and his version of boosting based on ROC beat Ada boost. And again, this is not surprising in some of the work of our own graduate students, Hugh, and I have a graduate student who's looked at boosting or averaging like methods. And I think things like Ada Boost are constrained by the fact that they're not really intended for this sort of criterion. So that's why we can beat them. Okay, so Russell Steele and the talking about model selection and the star IC wars. And I think if I read him correctly, AIC is overfitting, BIC, because of its bigger penalty, won't tend to do that so much. But what about the theory for BIC? It's a bit limited in some cases. We had a new form of BIC. And at that point, all I started to hear was, well, there's complex analysis, and my complex analysis is even more rusty than his, and this is hard, and the approximations are not very good. It seems like there probably is something in this. So the question is, does this really beat these other methods? And finally, why not do something very simple-minded, like something numerical, like cross-validation? Well, I guess people are either algorithmic or they like this sort of theory. Okay. Then moving on to clustering instead of classification. So we're talking about clustering categorical data, and Stephen was using the Hamming distance and defining something called a categorical distance vector. And this vector has some origin, which he was moving around, and he built some algorithm based on that, and it seems that he was able to beat autoclass K-modes. He's also quite interestingly able to automatically estimate the number of clusters, which I think is a useful aspect of this algorithm. And I don't think he said so explicitly, but I assume that one could use distance-based methods using the Hamming distance. But the reason for not doing that and developing this was that those other methods, like hierarchical clustering and so on, wouldn't have the same computational complexity as the CD algorithm or K-modes or whatever. Xianping Yu. Okay, then we get on to, okay, it's been academic so far. Now we get into the real world, and we get into industrial-sized problems, or in this case, industrial-sized clustering. Automated, but on the other hand, I did see a lot of options method mentioned along the way. But presumably, I guess the user has to pick some of these options, and then once those options have been chosen, then it's automated. The methods, or the algorithms, based essentially on k-means and extensions to deal with categorical data and so on. And this really intrigued me, this unfaithful somebody. So I guess I'd like to know what that means. What, these are potential customers, or for what? Wait. Simon Glitzman. Okay, so approximation of functions. So very interesting, the sort of thing that arises in many contexts. He talked a little bit about using Taylor series expansions, but to a limited number of terms. And it's not surprising that the polynomial approximations don't work very well, because we know that polynomials can do very weird things. They can get very, very wiggly and so on if you have high-order polynomial approximations. So he was using non-polynomial approximants and seemed to get a very accurate approximation. In these sorts of problems, one will usually look at order of approximation, because lots of times there'll be many methods where eventually the error is going to go to zero if you have large enough sample size or enough terms. So the real question is, how fast are you going to zero? So it'll be interesting to see that. Some questions I had. I'm not sure exactly what functions f of x were being used here. and that would impact on what you would expect to work well. For example, comparing with KNN, well, KNN would work well for step functions, but wouldn't necessarily work very well for analytic functions. Linear regression would work well for linear functions, but presumably not for nonlinear functions. So what sort of f of x is being used here? And I think that's very fundamental to all of these sorts of problems, approximation or optimization or whatever. What are the functions in your test suite of problems? That really makes a lot of difference. So it'd be interesting to know more about what the properties of the functions, like differentiability and so on, were. And I think that in questions, other methods like splines were mentioned. It was nice, though, that this was, I think, fully automated. Wenxu Huang. Okay, we're dealing with large samples and a large number of variables, and this industrial strength clustering and prediction. So there's a need for dimension reduction. But I think Wenxu was talking about dimension reduction in the sense of feature selection. That is, I don't just want to reduce the dimension of the x's. I want to find a good set of variables for this particular y variable. And a lot of times in dimension reduction, we do something like principal components, which really ignores the endpoint, that is to try and predict some y. So that was very nice. And I think he defined the association between y and x in terms of this dependence degree, and then went into some practical issues that the set of good features, the explanation base that's found, is defined to be one with no redundant information. But maybe you could back off a little bit from that optimal set of variables, and you could actually reduce the set of variables and maybe get almost all the information from a smaller set. And he has an interpretable information criterion. It's all information based, I think, but has some easy to interpret flavor to it. Okay, so what were some common features of all these talks? And then I'll just maybe hand it over to the audience and the speakers. So I've already mentioned these small world networks. What are the implications for neural networks? People like myself who work with, for example, NNet in R because it's free, you know, should we be doing something more complex like what was being suggested today? Complex data structures. We can have a lot of data. We can have data from different sources. Two of the talks were about rare class problems and how you might tailor the criterion for choosing, for fitting a model, or the algorithm for actually doing the fitting. You might tailor that to the specific rare class problem. Model selection is a big problem. I think we often fool ourselves, I think, by overfitting. Whether these star ICs can help to complement things like cross-validation, which are numerically quite onerous, particularly if you're going to do any tuning of the method as well. So if you're going to have to tune, say, your neural network, and now we've got, you know, even more complex neural networks to tune, you know, that starts to get into a factorial experiment type of thing for the tuning parameters, and you've got to do all this cross-validation, and these algorithms themselves are not particularly fast. So, you know, it's a real numerical problem. Automate, that seemed to be stressed by many of the speakers. Automation of the variable selection, number of clusters, the approximator that you're going to use, and so on. And I think this is right on the money because, for example, the variable selection from my own work, I found that what you use in terms of the variables is often more important than the actual method. Neural networks versus logistic regression versus whatever. The differences between those methods are swamped by using the right variables in the first place. And reducing the number of variables can make a lot of difference to prediction accuracy when you go out of sample. So I think I'll stop at that point. And what do you want to do at this juncture, Hugh? Just open the floor for... And it also means raises the question, what do you mean by uncertainty? Uncertainty about what? We can get uncertainty estimates in the sense of, you know, how well is a method doing through cross-validation or whatever, but that's a very global measure of how well it's doing everywhere. Whereas I think maybe what you're asking for is, how well am I doing for this one prediction, which is more of a, you know, the statistical way of doing things with a statistical model. You can say something about this prediction at this single X, whereas things like cross-validation are really looking at amalgamating the error across many cases. Yeah. What were you thinking in terms of model uncertainty?
Any thoughts about which of the four points you think better? Should we go to a synthesis of the two, or?
I have no idea. I mean, in most methods, we'll be just throwing out variables, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a problem of interpretability once you start weighting, but I think even if you throw out variables, it doesn't necessarily mean that the ones that are left are important, and the ones that were thrown out were necessarily unimportant, because there might be a deselection of correlated variables. So I'm not sure which method I would recommend. Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, you can do random forests and things like that, or randomized decision rules at each split. Then you're back. Did you want to say something, Stan? Well, you mentioned the two-way clustering based on those SVDs. That presumably is dependent on the scaling of the variables. Yeah. So still have the problem of interpreting the weight. Yeah. And many of the methods discussed today, I think, share that problem. Yeah.
microarray data, we have 20,000 predictors. And let's say that 100 of those predictors are all equally effective and best. Well, now the recursive partitioning is going to pick off the best of the 100. But I just told you they're all exactly equally good. But in the particular sample that you get in your experiment, there'll be random noise up and down. So you're going to pick off the best of the 100, but the best of the 100 is going to have, you know, some random noise associated with it. So when you go to a new data set, there'll be regression to the mean. So the tree that you get, the greedy tree, is likely to pick off the right variable if you're careful about how you do your variable selection, but it's also likely to be highly biased. You won't predict nearly as well on an out of sample tree as you think you might by looking at the tree. So there's a question of variable selection, and then there's also, given the enormous number of variables that are there, and if you're thinking about genes, there are a lot of genes in the same biochemical pathway, and they should all be upregulated about the same, and so on. So the variable selection thing, given the vastness of the number of variables that are issued, so you're still going to probably have a pretty substantial bias question going on.
Question about the time scale. For instance, to give an example, I in this talk where this gentleman was talking about the analogy of the Go strategy to play the Go game and apply for the kind of problems here. I mean, also in chess, one knows that the strategy cannot be learned within a game. It takes many games or many years of training until the experience is there. And with this experience, then one makes an evaluation. And the evaluation is about something which means it cannot be algorithmically checked, so you cannot do it within a computer all the steps you put in principle compute. You have to select a few, and this is based on your evaluation, and that is based on experience to some degree. What I'm saying is, in order to get this experience, you need a time scale which is much more longer than eventually the execution of the problem. And there are similar things when one thinks in terms of optimization problems regarding a Monte Carlo method and simulated annealings to find, let's say, a minimum of a function or a genetic algorithm to find new configurations. I mean, if you compare this again with biology, biology has had, let's say, billions of years to evolve.
Right.
And to give us time eventually to come up with some species which are reasonably intelligent. And the question is, can you do this in a computer program, or can you do this in an algorithm, and how much time do we have? So these are some questions, maybe somebody can
a bunch of data. The data is fine. There are a lot of missing values. well defined the model collection type. So in this way, I do not want to deal with it. I have heard about this when Peter mentioned this problem, that just to delete it. But if you delete it, your model totally is different.
Oh,
yeah, I know. I know, but basically, you have a machine.
Well, you know, the missing data thing, I mean, some of these algorithms will deal with missing data more easily than others, like recursive partitioning can be set up to deal with it to some extent, as long as I guess there's not too much, otherwise it would just become overwhelming.
Right now I'm handling a problem like this, where I have to do at the same time variable selection, and I'm assuming that some kind of backward selection is going to work. But with missing data. And the only thing I will come up with, and please tell me, by the way, is to apply multiple repetition at each step. And with the corrected standard errors, I pick the variable which I can drop first. And then again, multiple repetition. Computational testing can be automated if you want to.
So the suggestion is multiple imputation, which is
at each
stage.
Then the total variables are important.
Right.
You do multiple computation, you see with the corrected standard estimates of the partition and standard errors, which one can be dispensed of. And you try to drop the one that's most dispensable. Redo the algorithm, do some kind of lactic ratio test, some sort of things like that, or keep on AIP or DSP, or star IP. And keep going.
Well, I guess we want to do all of the above. We want to do variable selection, model selection with massive data sets, with much of the data missing, in a small amount of time, right? That's the summary.
They came out of groups where they deal with principal component analysis and partial elsewhere. And essentially, they have extremely good results when it deals with missing data. And they use things like trim score regression, expectation optimization, data simplification. And there are several papers that actually make comparisons about this method. So on Saturday, when I will be discussing about complex data in industry, I will give you some references. And also, right now, these methods are not an academic exercise anymore. We have results from industry that they took them and they have implemented them, and they have very good results. So, but the first step is called the website. 1 week's worth of
paper. Mm-hmm. So maybe I can ask you. Are you using your association dependence criterion to fill in missing values?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you can't. Okay. So getting back to the time thing, you can't do it right now, but in several months. Now that's your several months of your time.
No, it's done.
It's done. It's implemented. But what's the several months?
For
it to run?
No. I don't know when it's coming.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a very good comment. The reception. Should we quit and go over to the reception?
Yes, I'll just remind everybody, Generation 5 is hosting a reception. It starts now, right outside.
Discussion. Excellent summary you did, because you, for some of us, you put things in a completely different perspective.
Well, I couldn't.
Thank
that's
you.
The advantage of not.
On,
oh, thank you.
Thank you. That went quite well.
Okay, well, I...
everyone's time. Whatever you prefer. I'm my last.